This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know. Let them know.
And we welcome everybody for our review of Dynamite coming up in just a few minutes, but do want to alert everybody that we have Rewind Away dropping on Thursday. We are going to be chatting about the Bret Hart playlist from 1996, 1997. That's going to be dropping postwrestlingcafe.com. And then as we march towards the weekend, we have Rewind to SmackDown Friday night. Way and I will be here after a 3-hour edition of SmackDown. And then into the weekend, we have Collision Course with Kate from Montreal and John Cena. And I will be doing a show with Eric Marcotte Sunday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern, covering UFC 312, which has two notable championship fights. And then there's a lot of other fights on this card from Australia as well.
Okay. Don't forget Post Pro Res. That's coming out with Karen Peterson, WH Park tomorrow. On the free feed. Friday on the free feed. Tomorrow on the free feed, we're actually putting out John's recent audio update where he writes these opinion pieces. And, he's always done it in written form for the website, but now he started to do audio versions of those for patrons. We're going to release one of the ones he released last week talking about The Ultimate Fighters Season 1.
Yes, so a lot of great stuff coming up both this week and beyond. I do want to make mention that on Tuesday, February the 17th, I'm going to be doing a show with Braden Harrington and
The 18th?
Okay, yeah. Got to get these dates right. Tuesday the 18th, we're going to be doing a show on Saturday Night Live. We're going to review the 3-hour 50th anniversary special, and we will be putting together some of our lists. The best sketches, the best hosts, and the best players over 50 years. So that is going to be coming out.
That's a lot to choose from.
It is quite a lot, yes. And our list will be absolutely perfect. There will be no debate over any of our choices as well. So myself and Braden and Jordan Goodman. So the three of us will be doing...
Wow, you invited him? Are you sure?
He is coming on board, I was told.
All right, good luck.
Yes. So, man, you say that so dismissively.
I don't know.
Okay. Well,
troublemaker, that guy.
I'm looking forward to it. That's coming up in a few weeks. That will be available on the Post Wrestling Cafe as well. Tonight, Way, the Gateway Center Arena. The Gateway Center.
Gateway. I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming some sort of like internet provider.
I imagine this was like a drug trade or something. Like this is the... Is this like the marijuana of arenas leads to the big arena in town, which is like your heroin or no? State Farm Arena is the smack.
Is AEW a gateway to what?
It's a gateway to Max, the streaming service.
Okay.
That's what they're hoping for. Yeah, I have nothing. First of all, I thought this venue looked great on television. This crowd, it was basically 2,400 people was the last number from WrestleTix. With the exception, I would say, of like one match, I thought they were great throughout the 2 hours. Like, they were so lively. There was so much chanting on this show. It felt like it was exactly what Will Ospreay said, that this had like this party vibe to it. And it's not too often that I think we get that kind of reaction from these AEW crowds.
Well, I would say, judging by this episode and Raw from last week, I think every wrestling show should take place in Atlanta.
Has taken place from Atlanta in the last 3 weeks.
At the very least, I feel like it's on my bucket list to experience a wrestling event in Atlanta. I've never been to the city. They make all of these look incredibly fun. It's purely Atlanta, yes.
Well, so we had Raw, we had NXT, Tonight is Dynamite, and this weekend MLW's doing a super fight in Atlanta. So maybe you should fly down for a super fight.
You know what? I might wait for the dollar to be a bit more stronger before I do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you fly down there, they might not let you back unless we got to pay a tariff for a way to come back. So anyway, great crowd. And Renee Paquette previews the main event between Ricochet and Swerve as they're making their arrivals. And then she speaks with Jay White, who's got a newfound relationship with Cope. And Jay White explains he's had to rely on rated FTR. And with that, the Death Riders walk up to him outside the arena. And they are followed by FTR and Cope. And a big brawl ensues as they go into the backstage area, out to the arena. And Cash Wheeler whips Pac into the entranceway tunnel. And the mark on this guy's back, it looked like he had been like just whipped with that same strap that Eddie Thorpe used on Tuesday night. He had the nastiest gash right down his back. Did not look like something you'd want to be sitting back for a long plane ride home afterwards with. But Claudio ends up, first of all, there was a shatter machine onto Pac, and then Claudio takes the bullet for Cope, or for Moxley, by taking the spear from Cope. And Cope gets on the mic asking if Moxley still has a set of nuts because he wants to face him at Revolution. And John Moxley, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. And then John Moxley denies him and does not want to face him at Revolution. So instead, Jay White issues his own challenge for a Brisbane brawl with him and Cope teaming up to take on John Moxley and Claudio. And this is Cope realizing he's just been booked for a 20-hour flight for this impromptu match that Jay White just volunteered him for.
Yeah, so Mox never agreed to this one either. He could have just said no to this one, too.
Exactly, exactly. It was just like, okay, I'm going to turn down this challenge, and then another challenge was issued, and we were just led to believe, like, this one he will take. This one he will go with. He'll face him in a tag, just not a singles match.
So after my praising of like, the Renee Paquette interviews with the Death Riders and how I feel like we got plenty of, like, you know, exposition about exactly what's going on here, I thought it made no sense why Mox would turn down the challenge from Copeland. Like, I thought he was here to, I don't know, inspire, you know, this roster. Yeah. Like to get them to work hard. So like how exactly does it fit their MO to be denying challenges?
Cope hasn't worked hard enough. Guy just missed all this time due to a broken leg. What have you done since you've got back?
Okay, so he did say something to that effect, didn't he? Moxley says, "What, you don't deserve it?" Is that right?
I think he'll deserve it after this Brisbane brawl.
Yeah, I think
that would
so
be
too.
My thought.
Yeah, does every like hardcore match need to be named after a town?
Yes.
Yeah, the Brisbane Brawl, a Toronto Tussle.
Yes, the
Atlanta Attack
Amalgamation, the Atlanta Annihilation.
Sure. Okay. Otherwise, like, it was an okay segment, you know, perfectly fine is what I would suggest. I like the little detail of Marina Shafir carrying Renee away at the start of the attack, almost as if they were, like, sort of, like, boss's orders. Like, hey, like, you make sure my wife is okay, but while we, you know, unleash havoc. But other than that, like,
how can you hate this man? Like, he has his priorities in check. Okay.
But I would also suggest, how can you like this man? And more importantly, how can you like this angle? Like, if this ended,
that's the
show,
bigger problem. Way, it's not so much how can you not like this man. It's how can you like this booking? Like, the heat is the booking.
Sure.
And that to me is still the struggle with all of this. So I do understand that frustration. And I mean, they set this match up for Australia, and you would think, like, coming out of this, I would just have, like, I think Moxley needs to be put into a situation. Like, Claudio should not be the fall guy here. I think this should be Cope pinning Moxley and give this, like, a big newsworthy finish coming out of this. Like, this is not just your New Japan multi-man tag where, you know, isolate the guy that's going to take the fall, and it's very predictable. This should be, like, if you're going to go with this as your pay-per-view match, put all your resources behind it to build it up as much as possible. So that is added. Moxley pending his approval of this match. And then after being literally the goading for this match is Buddy Matthews is from Australia. And for weeks, he's been calling Okada a bitch, and Okada is no bitch. And this has pressured him to accept this match for the Continental Championship at Grand Slam in a week's time.
It works.
I am no bitch.
Yeah, and just call your opponent a bitch enough times, and it works. So.
We can agree. Now that the Continental Classic is over, and you've got the Young Bucks that are away, like, Okada is... There's just not a whole lot going on with Okada. He just kind of is just there.
Yeah, the Elite aren't a thing anymore, right? Can we, like, I guess maybe there's still loose affiliation, and whenever the Bucks decide to come back, I'm sure they'll tie up that loose end, but there's certainly no faction.
There's no Perry's Jack Perry. There's no Young Bucks. It's just Okada doing these backstage segments, and he wrestles occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess a bit of a holding pattern for the time being.
Don Callis comes out after Will Ospreay to announce that his opponent tonight is Mark Davis, and... Boy, Will Ospreay, there was a time that I was very much negative on this man selling in his matches, more so his facial expressions because they were so ludicrous. But the man has become like a really great seasoned performer in many senses of the way. This was a throwback to Will Ospreay and look shocked. And he tried... And I'm sure Ruby Soho thought that this deserved an Oscar, but I did not. And this also was very convoluted. I will give them some credit to try and explain this. But first of all, Don Callis goes onto commentary to explain that when Mark Davis was in the hospital, he gave his power of attorney to Kyle Fletcher. Now, let's remember, the man was not in a coma. He had a knee injury, okay? I don't think he was put under for longer than a torn ACL would require, but he had to give over power of attorney. This is like the level of like a president that's going to be, in a comatose state for several hours. So Kyle Fletcher had power of attorney. Therefore, they own Mark Davis, and he has to go along with this. Number one, this would have been more helpful for Don Callis to explain this so the live crowd would know this dynamic, because they just totally dumped on Mark Davis for turning on his friend. This also makes no sense because Mark Davis has been back and been wrestling the Don Callis family in many matches, and now all of a sudden it's, I had you under contract this whole time. So they were trying to make sense of this, but in doing so, it only created more logic gaps that for me were... Like, you really cannot explain them.
I'm never really a fan of just, like, getting into contracts.
Contracts are the worst wrestling. In this company. Contract storylines have virtually always missed in this company.
Yeah, please leave the contract discussions to the online audience. You know, people like John Pollock and Brandon Thurston who might be able to dive into some of that a bit better. Leave it out of the professional wrestling turns and angles and all that. I could see maybe in storyline some sort of like dispute taking place after those matches. You know, they were trying to explain maybe why this being the reason why we haven't seen Mark Davis for a period, because of this sort of legal tie up that he's been involved in. You know, they benched him. They Ricky Starks.
Maybe he needs Mojo Rawley to be representing him.
Clearly,
he's got a terrible agent here.
The other thing is, I can presume that like the contract also says, Mark Davis, you don't just have to be a part of the Callis family. You have to look really excited about it too, because Mark Davis came out here like playing to the crowd, like full on heel. Did not look like he was being like forced into this at all. Like he just played very much a straight heel. So I don't exactly know how to explain that one, but yeah.
Kyle, it's my knee. I need to sign over my rights to you. So we get Will Ospreay and Mark Davis. And Excalibur mentions they shared a house together. It's like, him too? They were like, yes, during the pandemic, Will Ospreay opened his home to Kyle Fletcher. He also opened his house to Mark Davis. Like, there's a problem here. This guy's obviously a horrible housemate because they are scarred from not the pandemic, but who they were forced to live with, because now both of them have decided, you know what? We must end this man, Will Ospreay. He was a lousy guest host.
I mean, maybe it wasn't such a big house. Maybe he had a gas leak.
Well, could have been. Maybe they were freezing in their basement. So anyway, as soon as I heard the words power of attorney, I was like, oh my God, just kill me. Davis is in control and Ospreay goes after the knee. It's like that's a pretty crummy move for a friend here. guy had to give over his lifetime rights because of this knee injury, and now you're trying to send him back there. Then the best exchange, Don Callis says that Mark Davis reminds him of Don Leo Jonathan, which is a comparison I'm always telling Way that strikes me as Mark Davis. Taz says, you know what? He kind of reminds me of John Cronus. It's like, you could not come up to me with like two more John Cronus and Don Leo Jonathan. Yeah, there are two people separated at birth. I mean, this John man, the third eliminator, Don Leo Jonathan. what?
I mean, they're wrestlers, so like I imagine they would have a better basis for this comparison than me, but. I are they judging by body type? Are they talking about in-ring style? What exactly is the similarity to you?
Well, I was trying to make this analogy, and I thought the analogy should, much like Saturn and Cronus would perform, just totally eliminate this, because this is, that's all I've got. Yeah. Is that Don Leo? No, that's John Cronus. No, sorry. That
it's
looks
Mark
so...
Davis.
So... we get a rotating dragon suplex by Davis, and then Ospreay uses the hook kick to set up the Os Cutter, and Don Callis nearly gets involved, and Davis cuts off the Hidden Blade, jumps. This was the coolest move that Davis had. He leaps onto Ospreay's back, and then his weight comes down and turns it into like a spike pile driver, which was a really nice setup. And then he goes over to the corner, and with one go at it, he rips the turnbuckle pad off. And somewhere Tessa Blanchard was watching this and thinking, God damn it, is it really that easy? Because she had the struggle of all struggles on that last pay-per-view with the turnbuckle pad. Not the only struggle she had during that match, but the turnbuckle pad was number two. Rick Knox stands in front of the exposed turnbuckle pad. He will not allow this to happen. The man that has turned his back and allowed everything to go protects this. And because of this distraction, Davis eats the Hidden Blade and Ospreay wins in 11 minutes. And that was our match here. I mean, just overbooked to death with some of this story. But when they actually got to the actual match, what did you think, Way?
I mean, good match, as you would expect from a Will Ospreay match. You know, in this one, like, you see some semblance of chemistry between he and Mark Davis, and I thought the in-ring action was very good. Crowd was really hot for it. Thank goodness this angle took place in Atlanta, because they were treating this like it was a big deal. Maybe they're big John Cronus fans in Atlanta, and they thought, John Cronus is here. He's facing Will Ospreay.
Don Leo Jonathan.
I mean, this was the type of surprise that I think could have really backfired, because like anytime you do like a type of mystery thing, I think you're setting people up for disappointment if they're not a big enough star. And Mark Davis isn't really that big of a star. Obviously, the surprise is the fact that he was on Ospreay's side. But even then, I think, you know, could have potentially turned out bad for them. But Atlanta gave him a good reaction. And having him come out here and basically lose to Ospreay in 10 minutes kind of kills like any freshness he might have as a Don Callis, you know, team member. But the saving grace was Kenny at the very least mentioning him and mentioning his storyline for this live audience, so that we may get some follow up with him.
Or Don Callis, now that he owns his contract, maybe he can just bench him at home and he's just got to sit at home.
Yeah, injury time added.
Yeah, injury time added, and they explain you can work indies, but we don't have any time for you here on the show. Yes. So yeah, I did not like the angle portion of this, and I did feel this was like this match almost had to overcome some of the just complications of this story. We will see where it goes, but I thought this was a rough reintroduction of Mark Davis, to say the least. There was a video for Swerve and Ricochet, mainly.
The stuff with Kenny too.
Oh, sorry. Ospreay gets onto the microphone and he addresses Don Callis and he signals for Kenny Omega, and one steamboat, two steamboat, three, and then finally his music played and out comes Kenny Omega just to say hi. He tells Mark Davis, "I don't know what Don Callis has over you, but there are people he can trust." And Mark Davis was like, yeah, obviously not. The guy who I gave my power of attorney to, I cannot trust him, and I'm screwed. So Kenny promotes his return to an AEW ring happening in Brisbane against Takeshita and Fletcher, who are now out with Callis, and they will get to feel what Kenny Omega is feeling. The future is the two of us. And then good night and goodbye. And my God, they just doubled their production budget with this pyro that went off. And even Kenny Omega seemed like, what the hell is going on here? This was very excessive.
Yeah. Like, this is just a promo, guys. I'm not even dressed up.
He literally had almost nothing to say. Yeah. Like, all he said was, tag match. I'm coming back. All things established. Like, there was literally nothing other than, hey, look, it's me.
If he's back there, I think the crowd would want to see him. So,
well, yeah. Sure. Yes. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Plus, two editions of Rewind Away. We will revisit Bret Hart's heel run in the WWF NXT TakeOver New Orleans from 2018. Plus, we have coverage of AEW Grand Slam Australia, New Beginning in Osaka, an Ask Away, Ask Us Anything mailbag show, and of course, Captain America 4 and Collision Course every single Saturday night. All that and more at postwrestlingcafe.com. Then we got the Swerve Ricochet video and the Hurt Syndicate come out. West Side Gun is shown in the front row and MVP is getting on the mic. Total babyface reaction for the three of them. They are heading to New Orleans for the Super Bowl, and then they give props once again to Private Party, who have a bright future. They were just the wrong people in the wrong place at the wrong time. All accurate, and I mean, this was just at least an acknowledgement of Private Party did not come out of this too strong, to say the least. And we haven't even heard from them since. So anyway, they're a rehab is certainly in order for those two. But they are now putting everyone on notice. They are champions, and they are open for business. And taking them up on that offer are the returning guns. Not West Side, but instead Colton and Austin. And they want to chat business. They've been waiting 2 years for a tag title rematch. MVP allows them into the ring because they respect their father. And with that, gives them a tag title match. Next week, it will be the Hurt Syndicate and a couple of Ass Boys. And the Hurt Syndicate leave, and Austin says, Ass Boys, you're goddamn right we are. They are embracing the ass.
Yes, they are. Yeah, they could have their dad back again.
He needs a new act, so why not? Yes.
Yeah. So I think the Guns, like, they had a great video last week. They just came back here. I would have expected a little bit more of a build up to them before just kind of entering into a title match, like, right away. You know, like, as far as I remember, like, I believe they were babyfaces when they left, but, like, I feel like a little bit more of a sort of like building up of momentum might be in store before a title challenge. Obviously, they're going to lose next week, and maybe that's what they consider to be the start of their actual push. But it seems like for AEW, at the very least, a bit of a strange way to start off, you know, people coming back.
It's not like life or death, what you just said there, but there is a larger problem when we are building up matches and the conclusion, like, obviously they will lose. And that's to me I wouldn't call that the case of like Swerve and Ricochet tonight. And it's not like across the board, but I do see that as like a common issue of AEW is the tiering of so many of these stars. And like, that is like, I think let's just talk about this program right here. And it's like the Guns losing next week. And like, you just fall into this formula where it's like they come in, they challenge for the tag titles, and then what, they disappear for 3-4 weeks, and or they're thrown onto Collision, and they just kind of fall off path. And that seems to be, it happens a lot with a lot of these acts. I mean, we're just talking about Mark Davis right now. Do you really have faith that there's going to be this big long journey for Mark Davis that's coming out of this? Or was this, hey, this was Ospreay's opponent this week, and now he's going to be a bit player in the Don Callis family.
In AEW, like, by and large, we know Tony has his chosen acts that are going to be featured, and then everybody else just plays support. You know, that's part of the sort of like lineup of guys that, you know, for instance, the Hurt Business will beat. And I obviously you hope for more than that, just for, you know, for people that are just coming back like the guns. But man, to put them in a title match right away against a team that's pretty much unbeatable, I don't know if that's the best thing for a returning team like the guns. But, you know,
like, let the guns, like, they're bringing them back as serious, like they're not doing the comedy stuff. Like, give them just a few weeks to get some, like, some wins up and make this mean something instead of 7 days notice. And like, you just, like, you rush this return after one vignette, and it's just kind of cutting off their legs is what it feels like.
Well, we'll see how they book them. Like, they might have a very creative out of this.
Harley Cameron's win over Taya Valkyrie was shown from Collision, and Renee interviews Cameron with her Mercedes Moné ventriloquist doll. If they are not selling these ventriloquist dolls, then I don't know what they're thinking.
Harley, how much Cameron, would you pay for a Mercedes Moné ventriloquist doll?
Me, nothing. These other folks that will just plop down money on weightlifting belts, plenty. They'll drop $40 on these. Absolutely.
40? I feel like it would be more than that.
I don't know. I don't know what a ventriloquist doll goes for these days. Harley Cameron is fantastic. She is going to do a concert on Saturday. This might be the first ever title shot that comes out of a concert.
That can't be true. What about The Rock?
Well,
sure, he's done something. Elias, well,
she is 1-0. So, I mean, we're kind of, she has a concert on Saturday, and then there's next Wednesday's Dynamite, if she is doing this match with Mercedes at Grand Slam. That's all they've got. So, I would think Deonna would be in line to 2-0. 2-0 could generate you a title shot, but maybe the concert will push Mercedes over the line. So, anyway, she does the ventriloquist act. She's very good at this. And Mercedes comes in, laughs her off, and laughs over her winning her first match. And Harley Cameron is a loser. And then Harley gave her the middle finger. And Renee treated this as though this were of national security, of what she was risking.
I think this Harley Cameron run has been excellent. You know, like, this, you're talking about a person that has made the most of every single amount of TV time that she's been given since QTV, dude. And when the focus now is actually on her and a title campaign for her, of course it's going to be successful, and it's been even more entertaining than anything else she's done. So she is actually a very special talent, and I'm glad to see that, you know, all the work she's put in is now finally paying off. She's going to get a massive reception on that show.
Then Renee interviews Hangman Page and asks about him going into Swerve's locker room last week, and Page just dismisses it, calling it a mistake, a moment of weakness where he was seeking him out. Never ask me about that again. I will say, I thought that this was really, I like this, where you're curious about where this is going, and of me not having faith in certain aspects of AEW booking, this is one where I do feel this will be followed up on and have a purpose to it. And then he is asked if he has regret about ending Christopher Daniels' career, not realizing he was back on the Jericho Cruise. But Daniels accepted...
No, that was Curry, man.
Sorry, John. Sorry. I mistook. Daniels accepted the risk of a Texas death match, has no regrets. And then we cut to Max Caster, ask him to wrap this up, and wants Hangman to do the same thing that he did to Daniels, to either Anthony Bowens or Billy Gunn. But Page suggests, well, you're here, why don't I hurt you? And he chases after Max Caster. And what a chase this would be, apparently going all throughout the next match and into the next segment.
Yeah, I guess a big enough arena where you could do that. Yeah.
Brody King.
I'm very interested to see the Swerve stuff. You know, they're kind of like, it seems like it's a long-term thing, and they're mentioning it just enough to keep it in the background, to keep us interested while they're continuing to push all of these different elements like Daniels and now Caster.
Brody King and Buddy Matthews against Konosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher. This was a great match. The Hounds of Hell, Brody King and Buddy Matthews. Don Callis is out. He's on commentary again, and Excalibur asks him if he's aware of what the law of diminishing returns means, coming back for a second time. All four are on the floor, where Fletcher and Takeshita are placed on chairs and hit with King's running crossbody, and then they got the advantage on King during the break. King would pop up from a German suplex, and Takeshita avoids the gonzo. Both go down, and the crowd is applauding this. In come Matthews and Fletcher. A fan facing the hard camera had a sign that read, Mr. Ripley, and then he proceeded to hit this incredible tope con hero onto both. So correct that. He is the talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah,
and then Matthews goes to the top. When Okada's music plays, And then Buddy Matthews just stops everything he is doing. And he just fixates on this screen. And he's watching. And he's watching. And there is no Okada. They blame Callis for orchestrating this. And he does regain his bearings. But then they double team Brody King with forearms. And it ends with Matthews being thrown out. And King is hit with the assisted brain buster. Kyle Fletcher gets the pin in 14 minutes and 15 seconds. Pretty goofy with the Okada stuff, but I did think this tag was pretty stellar. And I thought Buddy Matthews in particular looked really great in this match.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now that Malakai Black is gone, we're finally getting a Buddy Matthews taking a big step up.
I don't recall stating that I was gone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm going to keep beating this dead horse no matter where he shows up and what he will never have left AEW. I will never acknowledge it till the man does. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
He's literally got to be on WWE programming and state the words, "I have left AEW." Okay. He must do that at least on Instagram. Okay.
Gotcha.
He owes it to everybody.
Gotcha.
It's just a hug. What's wrong with a hug?
I think, you know, he's starting to speak up more, and I think he's great. You know, I'm looking forward to actually seeing him get some focus, especially in Australia, where I think he'll be treated like probably a pretty big deal. I hope, you know, he lives up to
his
new last name.
Yes.
His wife's last name.
Buddy Ripley. Okay. Yeah. Samoa Joe and Hook are backstage, and Joe is furious about the chair shot he took on Collision. Hook says, "It's like you told me, if you're furious, you can't be focused." And they go into the world's smallest locker room containing Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian, and they beat the hell out of them as a message for Christian. Meanwhile, Christian is peeking in, watching this with Mother Wayne, and then they go hide and then pretend that they are just walking in and not aware what had happened to Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian. So all I can hope is that Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian are cord cutters or don't have access to Max and don't go back and watch this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're probably not rewatching the show.
Yeah, we don't have rewatchers. God forbid we have the invisible camera, but we will have this. MJF comes out to address geriatric Jeff Jarrett. And he explains that the E in AEW doesn't stand for elderly. And that carny schmuck is out of his way. And now I'm closer to regaining my title. When all of a sudden Max Caster runs out, he's running away from Hangman. So Hangman comes out and he stands up in front of MJF before continuing to chase Max Caster. We never got a payoff to this chase if he caught him.
I imagine it'll result in some sort of match.
I bet they're going to run into the arena and the chase will continue on Saturday in Houston.
They're just going to chase each other. Like,
they went from Georgia to Texas.
Through the freeway?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Wow. All right.
So then MJF is interrupted by Dustin Rhodes and he comes out, and this was, everyone should have known this was coming. If we had looked at AEWTix.com, we would have known, hey, it's the time of the year AEW's going to Austin, Texas. So it's time to build up a Dustin Rhodes match. And that means, Dustin, it's time for your two big promos a year. That we need one of them tonight. And Dustin Rhodes brought it here. He tells MJF, "You badmouth everyone, even people who are no longer here, like my friend Owen Hart. So keep his name out of your mouth, you son of a bitch." That was a terrible Dustin. "Or I will kick your teeth out and stop talking about people's wives, past issues with drugs and alcohol, because I'm one of those. I've been clean for 16 years. I went straight to hell and I kicked the devil's face in. You are no devil. You have all the potential in the world, but you choose to go to these dark places. There's a reason I'm still here at 55 and can hang with everyone on this roster, because I'm the last of my kind." And in a quote that maybe I should make my new voicemail, "I am better than you, and your punk bitch ass frickin' knows it." What a t-shirt. MJF sarcastically states, "Well, that was incredible, Dustin. All those years of you being a worthless drug addict must have turned your brain to Swiss cheese if you believe you're better than me. It took you 37 years of blood, sweat, and tears just to get out of your daddy's shadow. And after all that hard work and sacrifice, you now live in the shadow of your little brother." And that sends Dustin over the edge as he attacks MJF. Security is in to break them up. And MJF, on the way out, warns Christopher Daniels that, watch out, old man. So this is MJF against all the elderly folks in all elderly wrestling that he is going after here. And this was an awesome promo from Dustin Rhodes, and this will be the match next Wednesday.
Anytime Dustin Rhodes gets the chance to speak, I pay attention, because I think he can be one of the stronger promos, I think, on the entire roster. You know, has that veteran sense, and I think at this point sounds as good as he's ever sounded in ring. Like, I was really high up on this guy since he returned as Goldust, you know, like almost like 10 years ago. He's been on an incredible run since then, and he's still holding up. So there's just like something is very unique about him, in the fact that how he's able to maybe stay in the shape he is. I'll tell you, I think I'm more excited about this match than the Jeff Jarrett feud at this point. Like, I'm both in ring and on the microphone. I feel like I'm more interested in a Dustin Rhodes than a Jarrett.
Well, it does tell you that it will probably be MJF Jeff Jarrett at the pay-per-view, I'm thinking.
Sure. Yeah, I think so. Or do you think it could be longer term than that?
Oh, man. Yeah, maybe it's... I don't know. I don't know how far you go with this with Jeff Jarrett. There's certainly... Obviously, Jeff Jarrett, I think there's a lot of support for Jeff Jarrett. I also think that in this role, it's also an indictment, I think, of the company, where he is such a featured player when there is all of these other acts that are scrounging for time. And you're looking at the amount of time and resources you're dedicating to Jeff Jarrett. Is the payoff worth what you are putting into this?
His big story is the Owen, of course, and then presumably maybe something at All In as well, if it has to do with the Owen. And then it's the big retirement match, which might still take place this year. So we'll see. But MJF's big program, of course, is with Hangman Page. So maybe Revolution is Jarrett and then Page after that.
Yeah, there is quite a lot going on here, but I thought this was a really great segment.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Then we go to Timeless Toni Storm and Queen Aminata. And this featured Mariah May on commentary. And Justin Roberts announces, playing the role of the glamour Mariah May, Timeless Toni Storm. And Toni Storm walks out to Mariah May's theme. And I get on Buddy Matthews for being just fixated on Okada's music. You would have thought that Mariah May was just informed that, like, she's being deported. She was so bothered by this, and obviously she has to sell this, but it was really hard for me to really get into, like, this is grand injustice that this woman is dressed up as me. And I refuse to call her match.
I thought Mariah May gave, like, the perfect look, you know, here. It was the perfect reaction of disgust that this was happening, you know. Well, I mean, you have to sell it. You have to do something.
I understand. I you have to perfect... sell it. It doesn't mean to me that this is a I don't what? Know. I just felt this was a this did not work for me.
Really?
I did not enjoy this.
I thought this was one of the best things on the entire show. She, first of all, like, nailed it.
And she looked great for what this was going for. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and it plays directly into everything that has been a part of their relationship, you know? May cosplaying as Toni Storm was, like, sort of the initial spark. They're all playing roles here, and this was the next step. It was the reverse.
So why is this so horrific?
Because it's further mind games, you know? It's like, what if I started this podcast dressed up as you and started acting and talking like you?
I'd be so angry, Way. Oh, my God. I mean, I wouldn't be able to talk. It would be so traumatic.
It might throw you
off. You're dressed as me. How dare you?
You're really downplaying the effects of this. But I mean,
okay, I'm not downplaying that, dude. This crowd, I will say this: this crowd was like dead for three quarters of this, and then all of a sudden, this is awesome chance. It was wild to me how fast. They were pretty dead for the beginning of this. I thought they were pretty dead for the beginning of this.
They might have just been in awe of how great performance this was.
Well, this was maybe they were watching speechless Toni Storm, because that's what this crowd sounded like. So Serena Deeb is watching backstage. Just a lot going on here. I mean, maybe we don't need to be shooting a million angles here.
Deeb is Aminata's program.
Yes, of course. And so Aminata is getting offense. She hits the hip attack, and then she's doing Toni Storm's pose on the floor. So Mariah May needs to be upset at Toni Storm for impersonating her. Toni Storm, who's playing Mariah May, is still Toni Storm and needs to be upset that Queen Aminata is impersonating her real-life self, even though she's under the guise as Mariah May.
Yeah, the Aminata timeless impressions, I guess, were kind of unnecessary, just especially given she was not playing timeless Toni Storm.
Here. It's mind games. May says that Storm is missing two things as she grabs her breasts, and Tony Schiavone was aghast at this, realizing this difference. There are chops from each. They get into some slaps, and then Aminata slips behind the back into a German suplex and then hits a running shin, and then the crowd, all of a sudden, this is awesome, and Storm nails her with his knee to the gut, hip attack, but then instead of Storm Zero, hits her with Mayday to win in 9 minutes. Renee then gets into the ring, interviews Storm, who insists, "Call me Mariah," as she invites Mariah into the ring for an embrace, but May storms off, and that was the segment. We'll agree to disagree on this one for me. This one did not hit for me. I thought this was a miss on the show.
I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought the gimmick was very entertaining, and I thought the action was actually very good too. So it you know, for a storyline that's been going on for so long, especially in these past few weeks, I think they've done a great job of like continuing to find new creative ways to make it feel fresh. And tonight was one of those.
As we are now, pretty much have the card pretty much together, like in the spirit of ways. Of course, they will lose. I mean, Harley Cameron will lose. Buddy Matthews will lose. Toni Storm needs to win this championship in Australia.
I think so, yeah.
Dustin Rhodes is backstage, and he is pissed. We are warned by Excalibur. And he kind of just gave, like, the 1 minute version for like an Instagram reel version of his promo, where he's like, yeah, "People have been chipping away at me for 37 years. I'm still here. I live for blood, sweat, and tears. And I'm going to beat your ass next Tuesday night in Austin, bitch." And so this is a bit confusing because they are taping Dynamite on Tuesday, but it is airing on Wednesday next week. So that was the difference here. And Excalibur did emphasize at the end of the episode Wednesday for Dynamite. So that's a go. Video of Big Bill and Hobbs. And then we get a live edition of the New York Minute inside of the arena, where Chris Jericho doesn't understand how Bandido is a wanted man because no one wants him, but he is taking the $100,000 bounty on Bandido's head and upping it to $200,000 with the real life bounty hunter, Brian Keith, going after Bandido. So maybe if Brian Keith fails, they'll bring in Dr. D, David Schultz, to go after Bandido. Maybe that'll be our program down the road.
Or Dog.
Yeah, that too. Maybe him and Hulk Hogan could team up together.
What do you mean?
They're brothers in controversy. Dog the Bounty Hunter and Terry.
Oh, I see. I'm not even aware.
Oh, you got to keep up to date, Way.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
come on.
That's
an old story with a Dog. So Big Bill then addresses Hobbs, who comes out with a knee brace on. They brawl. The Outrunners join. And eventually, the Learning Tree are ejected from the building. And I guess we are getting to Hobbs and Big Bill, but it appears that Hobbs he's working with a knee injury.
I guess so. Like, this is a legitimate injury from
apparently he was at the building last week and legitimately was not cleared and could not wrestle. So there was like an injury coming out of that parking lot brawl. And I mean, I'm just watching here and assuming it's a knee injury.
And cleared enough to be able to work.
Was
a
cleared
match.
Enough to do physicality here, obviously. So I guess they feel it's okay.
Okay.
They should be selling knee braces as well. I think those would be a big seller.
Yeah, yeah, I would get one. I like the presentation of the brawl and, like, you know, the camera falling down.
Look at this fan in the front row, man. He was getting a live up close shot of this. He was engulfed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Swerve Strickland and Ricochet. This one, man, I knew they were going to have the overrun, but this was like, this was very late that they were getting to this match. So Swerve is out in his embassy robe, which would be a key focus of this match. And then Ricochet jumps him with chair shots. The bell rings. He immediately hits Vertigo and Swerve kicks out. And they note this is their first match since 2017. They start to fight on the barricade and they are balanced on top of this barricade. And Ricochet goes for a jumping Rana and Swerve catches him, maintains his balance. There is no wobbling. This was incredible. And then he just drops Ricochet back first with a power bomb on top of this guardrail. I mean, this did not look fun to take for Ricochet, but in terms of the execution of this, I was just amazed at the balance here and how coordinated this ended up being.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Holy. I don't think I've ever seen a spot like this before.
This crowd, I mean, the bald stuff, I mean, whatever you think about these chants, man, did this crowd get into them. Bald forever, Trevor is bald, bald chants, just all variations of them, and it added quite a lot of heat here. And there are multiple powerbomb counters, ending with a swerve, power slam, then into the flatliner and house call, lands the swerve stomp, but Ricochet kicks out. And then there's a spot where this was the only kind of fumble in the match, was Swerve is on the edge of the apron, and Ricochet went for like the Dragon Lee spot, but instead of into a leaping Rana, was going for a leaping poison Rana, and it just did not work. He slid down and just turned it into a German and just followed that with a springboard 450. I couldn't have imagined if he had landed this poison Rana and then gone into the springboard 450, then a shooting star press. This was quite the sequence he had mapped out in his head.
Very ambitious and a very rare miss from Ricochet, but yeah. I mean, a very ambitious spot,
and even some by today's standards, some very rare, like, you effed up chance that the crowd got into here, which in a weird way it kind of works for this Ricochet character.
Yeah,
I think to like do something like this and the crowd gets on him, like, obviously not by design, but I don't think it was a bad reaction to have here. The spirit gun gets stopped by a house call and this crowd goes wild at that. He sets up for another swerve stomp and he comes down, but Ricochet puts the X up. He scissors the arms, and down comes Swerve. I guess this X somehow broke his balls because Swerve is dead, and he is hit with a spirit gun from behind, and Ricochet wins. I thought a semi-surprising outcome here, and as Swerve is selling his balls, Ricochet puts on the embassy robe, shoving down Nana, and there we have King Ricochet leaving with the robe.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the match. I thought there was a lot of creativity put into the various spots on the barricade that catapult into the bottom turnbuckle. And I really feel like, you know, Ricochet, now that his character is clicking, I think the wrestling and the matches have been more exciting to watch. He wrestles essentially the same style, but because he's actually drawing attention now with the story, he's making the wrestling a lot more compelling. So this, to me, really was the missing element for this guy. He's at a new level now. Throughout the match, I liked the setup for the importance of the robe with Nana constantly guarding it. And I guess, you know, just even the announcers really putting it over as well. Ricochet stealing it, I think, is a great idea that hopefully might satisfy some of the people that feel like the scissor spots are maybe a little bit too grotesque, too violent. This is more, I think, of the speed of, like, traditional wrestling fairs, stealing like a personal belonging of somebody else's.
Ricochet is taking a hypodermic needle at the end of this.
I thought he was going to take the scissors to the rope, which would have been a
wow.
Would have been terrible.
I mean, no. He could still do that.
Oh, I hope it, if he does, it's a replica, because this is the Jimmy Rave rope, you know.
Yeah,
you
can't, yeah.
It's history. You can't mess with that. So, I mean, that would be a pretty damning serious angle if he cut the robe up.
Oh, well, this is obviously going to continue as well. Like, you've got this Hangman thing in the background with Swerve, but yeah, I could certainly see this probably extending to a pay-per-view rematch or something like that. That's a really heavy angle to do with the scissors. But I know some people are very squeamish about the scissors stuff, but I think it should be part of the act to a certain degree. Maybe we don't have to be slitting throats and stuff, but it's so associated with this heel character now that I think he's got to at least have them in the pocket, or like they're a threat that they're there without having to necessarily use them unless it's a big, big angle or something.
Agreed, agreed. Yeah, but you know, Ricochet is the hot act, so like him going over Swerve in this first match of potentially a series, I think is the way you want to go. Let's get the rematch and then let's see where it goes.
Yeah, I have to say I was really like, it makes a big difference when you have a crowd that is like this into things, which they were for a huge portion of the show, and I thought it made all the difference here. I thought this was a venue and a market that really clicked for them, as opposed to like booking like the big arena in Atlanta where you would have had a fraction of the building full. This looked great on TV, and more importantly, this was an audience that felt like they were here not just to watch wrestling, but specific AEW wrestling. They seemed up on all the characters. They made this product feel, it felt current, and that this audience was with all the stories. And that it makes a huge difference when AEW, like they struggle to get that kind of reception on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this edition of Dynamite. In particular, I thought it ended stronger than maybe it began. You know, like it started with all the Death Rider stuff, which is like fine. I didn't think it was bad this week, but it didn't necessarily like to me. If they ended the show with the Death Rider stuff, I think it would have been maybe a bit more of a flatter ending. But like the show kind of built up pretty well. You know, the Mark Davis surprise, your mileage kind of varies.
Yeah, power of attorney storylines aside.
But, you know, getting into the great wrestling on the show with the Hounds of Hell versus Takeshita versus Fletcher. I think the Dustin Rhodes stuff actually I've really enjoyed. I personally really enjoyed the Timeless Tony Storm Mariah May stuff, but then ending it with the excellent main event with some progression in story coming out of it, I thought was a great way to end the show.
All right, well, there you go. Those are our thoughts on tonight's edition of Dynamite. They will be doing a live edition of Collision this Saturday in Houston, and then they've got the Austin show next Tuesday, and then they're off to Australia for Grand Slam. We are going to be continuing things for the XL version of the show. So if you want to jump on board and stick with the show every single Wednesday night, you can do so at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you a 30-day subscription, and that includes the expanded versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, plus our bonus editions that we put out monthly, including two editions of Rewind Away this month. We will have coverage from Kate and Way on Grand Slam Australia. Next Tuesday, Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord are covering New Beginning in Osaka, and then Way and I will get together for a Ask Away mailbag session where we have a lot of questions to get to this month. That will be coming out in February, along with the SNL special and the show that is taking the world by storm, the launch of the book club with John Pollock and Neil Flanagan. All right, folks, get your books out. We are reviewing There's Just One Problem by Brian Gewirtz, former lead writer in WWE, talking about his decades working for WWE. We thought this would be a good entry point for people. We're going to both read the book. We're going to share our thoughts about it and then put it out for our Double Double and Espresso members. So all of that can be found postwrestlingcafe.com. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.